From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, that is, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, April the 3rd, 2024. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started officially with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or Naga nuggets, you get to make the call. It says here, if you have time to worry, you have time to pray. Yeah, true that. And then pray that you can stop worrying. Yeah. Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted history.
That's it right
there. Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Oh, boy.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
Hey. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1973 in a call that changed the world. Martin Cooper of Motorola made the first handheld mobile phone call to Joel S. Engel of Bell Labs. And now, all these years later, not a one of us can get by without our phone. Sheesh. And on this day in 1975, Operation Baby Lift, a mass evacuation of children in the closing stages of the Vietnam War, began. I remember the photos. I remember the incident. And one of those kids ended up growing up to become my doctor. All righty. As promised, President Trump posted his bond. What was it, $175 million in his New York civil fraud case, according to a court filing. As ABC News reported it, former President Donald Trump and his co-defendants have secured a $175 million bond in their New York civil fraud case. Which, by the way, this went down Monday. And Trump secured the bond through Knight Specialty Insurance Company. It says, as promised, President Trump has posted bond. His attorney, Alina Haba, said in a statement Monday evening, he looks forward to vindicating his rights on appeal and overturning this unjust verdict. Well, you know, it seems like the only people who don't know that the verdict was unjust are the people in the legal system. You and I know it. Donald Trump knows it. His attorneys know it. We all know it. All God's children know it. But everybody who has anything at all to do with New York law doesn't seem to know it. Oh, they know it. Come on. We all know that they know it. Again, this is just that Hail Mary play to keep Donald Trump off the ballot in November. And I don't think that's going to happen. I wish that I had the confidence of a sleepwalker that he will be elected, because I'm not convinced. I really do believe that the deep state is bigger and stronger than any of us realize. That's the problem. That's what keeps me awake at night. So ABC's story went on. Last week, a panel of judges from New York's appellate division granted the former president, his adult sons, and two former Trump Organization executives a 10-day stay of the $464 million judgment in their civil fraud case and permitted them to post a reduced bond of $175 million. Trump's lawyers, you know, before I go any further, that statement right there, that last paragraph that I just read you, points out what a kangaroo court system they have up there in New York State. You know, the fact that this guy Engeron, Judge Engeron, was able to come up with that figure right out of the top of his head, $464 million, for doing something that John Stewart has been exposed doing. Are they going to arrest John Stewart? No. I mean, the mockery that these people are making of the American justice system is just mind-boggling. So the ABC story continues saying Trump's lawyers had argued that the former president lacked the cash to secure a bond for the full judgment after being rejected by more than 30 bond companies. Without intervention from an appeals court, defense lawyers argued that Trump would suffer irreparable harm by having to sell off his namesake properties before he exhausted his appeal of the fraud ruling. Now, you take that part of the story I mean, even from ABC, you take that part of the story and you just digest that for a minute, it becomes very apparent what a kangaroo court system they have for a legal system in the state of New York. Now, CBS News had a few more details on what all this means, so let me read their account. Former President Donald Trump and co-defendants in his New York civil fraud case have posted a bond of $175 million, according to a court filing Monday by an insurance company. The posting brings to an end a six-week ordeal in which Trump scrambled to fend off possible seizure of property or assets stemming from a $464 million judgment by a judge who found he gained hundreds of millions through a years-long fraud scheme targeting banks and insurers. Let me interject something here real quick. That is the allegation. There was no proof that there was a fraud scheme. That's merely an allegation. Then it goes on to say, Trump was required to post bond to avoid enforcement of the judgment pending his appeal. Alina Haba, an attorney for Trump, said Trump's payment was made as promised. She said he looks forward to vindicating his rights on appeal and overturning this unjust verdict. The bond was lowered by an appellate court from the $464 million figure to $175 million on March 25th, hours after Trump missed a grace period deadline extended by New York Attorney General Letitia James, whose office brought the case. That's the one who should be going to jail. James had indicated her office would pursue Trump's assets if he failed to post bond. So now we live in a country where, just on indictment alone, no proof, no jury, just on indictment alone, a state government could place itself in the position of being able to confiscate your property and do so for political reasons. I mean, let's not forget, this is all about politics. It has nothing to do with business ethics. It has everything to do with politics. And for that alone, people like you and I should really, really be scared. Interesting article in the Epoch Times from Matt McGregor, where he says that retired U.S. Army General Michael Flynn warned of nefarious and underlying problems with the cargo ship's crash into the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. Now, when Michael Flynn speaks, smart people should listen. The man has an amazing resume of experience. And Flynn posted on X back on Sunday, quote, CISA, that's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, says it lost propulsion as it left port, talking about the ship, yet it still took an hour to get to the bridge, and then it slams into a main pylon where the tugboats that work 24 hours. Still too many questions linger. Sorry, that's just me and the way I think. Well, it wasn't the first time that Mr. Flynn alleged that the bridge's collapse into the Patapsco River wasn't accidental. When that's the case, you might want to start listening to somebody. So on the morning that the Singapore-flagged 948-foot cargo ship called the Dali, that's D-A-L-I, crashed into the bridge. And Mr. Flynn called the incident a black swan event, echoing fired CBS reporter Catherine Herridge's statements earlier this year when she said, I just feel a lot of concern that 2024 may be the year of a black swan event, which she defined as a national security incident that's very hard to predict. Well, funny, Mr. Flynn elaborated that these events emerged from the world of finance instead of the military. That's what he posted on X. He said, black swans normally come out of the world of finance, not military. The standard operating procedures for all U.S. ports, harbors, and bays that transit commerce and military activities are supposed to maintain an incredible level of discipline, rigor, and awareness for these very type events to not occur ever. Yet here we are. And then he further explained his post on Patriot TV, saying that a black swan event is meant to be unpredictable and knowable. With all of the other craziness that's going on over in Europe and the Middle East with China and our southern border, terrorist attacks in Russia, I just don't think this is one that is predictable. Now, officials have been too quick to rule out the incident being a terrorist attack, according to General Flynn. He says, the one thing that I do know is this is definitely something that was not predicted. Nobody thought that this was going to happen. He said, too much forethought and planning go into the proposal for ships in transit for an accident to occur. And more will be discovered. Now, William DeBagno, the FBI special agent in charge of the investigation, and Maryland Department of Transportation Secretary Paul Whitefield, denied that there was any evidence to suggest that it was a terrorist attack. In addition, you've got your Maryland Governor, Wes Moore, and Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Boy, there's a guy who can be trusted implicitly, right? And they determined the incident was an accident. But General Flynn and retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Rob Manis, who's good, was also on Patriot TV with Mr. Flynn, agreed it should continue to be deemed an incident until an investigation fully determines that it was an accident. Incident first, accident only after fully investigated. Now, Colonel Manis said many failures had to occur for the incident to take place. He says these are not single point failure systems. And he added that despite rigid monitoring protocols, there were no warning signs until the ship was approaching the bridge. And then he says, all of a sudden, you have multiple failures in multiple systems that result in this ship going right up and hitting that pylon. We think they were at about 6 to 7 knots. Before that, the ship was going at 13 knots. And the black smoke pouring out from the ship might have been coming from an attempt to reverse the engine. That is what it looks like if you look at the video. Go back and look at the video. So, Colonel Manis says, this is a massive vessel fully loaded with all that mass and momentum. It was doing 13 knots at the beginning of this incident, and that's really fast for that much capacity. Now, if the controls are digital with wireless access points, or if there's a USB port where Trojan Horse software can be uploaded, it could be that the ship was susceptible to a cyber attack. Now, the Baltimore State Police reported last Thursday that divers had recovered two bodies of the construction workers from a red pickup truck found 25 feet into the river. Now, the National Transportation Safety Board, you know, the NTSB, is investigating the incident. But one of the issues the government agency is investigating is whether the ship lost power before striking the bridge. I believe those are the allegations being made. The ship lost power. Really? Well, according to a local report there in Baltimore by radio station WROR, there are several unanswered questions for investigators, including why the pilot hasn't been named, why there are 2 minutes of black box audio missing, and whether the ship's computer system's capable of being hacked. Now, Jennifer Hamendi, chair of the NTSB, stated in a press conference that 21 crew members and two pilots were on board the ship. Got that? 21 crew members, two pilots. 56 containers weighing 764 tons of hazardous materials were identified on the ship. This included corrosives, flammables, and other miscellaneous Class 9 materials, stuff like lithium-ion batteries. And she said some of the hazmat containers were breached, causing a sheen on the river. That's not good. And then NTSB investigator in charge, Marcel Muse, said information from the Dolly's voice data recorder was recovered on the morning of the accident by the U.S. Coast Guard. The time of the recording included from midnight to 6 a.m. Now, the data recorder is comprised of audio from the ship's bridge as well as recordings from the ship's VHF or very high frequency radios. The quality varies widely because of the high levels of background noise and alarms. But at 1:24 a.m., alarms were heard on the ship's bridge audio. And he said that about the same time, VDR, that's voice data recorder, sensor data ceased recording. But the VDR audio continued to record using the redundant power source. At 1:26 a.m., that's 2 minutes later, the VDR resumed recording. He says, during this time, there were steering commands and rudder orders recorded on the audio. And this is before the pilot could be heard calling for tugboats in the area to help. Well, at 1:27 a.m., Mr. Muse said the pilot could be heard issuing a radio call reporting that the ship had lost power and was approaching the bridge. Now, there's a lot of aerial photography that was taken of where the ship hit the bridge. So there's no question in anybody's mind the exact contact point. Now, Ms. Homendy said the 9,090-foot bridge was completed in 1976. She says the average daily traffic on the bridge, annual daily traffic on the bridge, is 30,767 vehicles per day. And she added that the bridge is what they call fracture critical. What that means is if a member fails, that would likely cause a portion or the entire bridge to collapse. There's no redundancy. The preferred method of building bridges today is that there's redundancy built in, whether that's transmitting loads to another member or some sort of structural redundancy. She said there are 17,468 fracture critical bridges in the United States out of 615,000 bridges, adding that this bridge in particular was in satisfactory condition. She emphasized that the NTSB is currently focused only on obtaining information. She says, right now we're focused on obtaining information, getting the perishable evidence, and conducting the interviews. Oh, you can bet we're going to continue to watch this. Let's see if we can bring you a little bit up to speed here on Hunter Biden's tax case. Hunter filed 8 separate motions to have the case against him thrown out. They were all denied. Here's how it was reported by The Hill. A federal judge in California ruled against Hunter Biden's attempt to toss out his tax charges on Monday, letting the criminal case against the president's son move forward. The younger Biden faces 3 felony charges and 6 misdemeanor charges in connection to tax evasion, filing a false return, and failing to pay taxes between 2016 and 2019. His attorneys argued last month that the case was politically motivated and tainted by 2 IRS agents who later became whistleblowers. He filed 8 separate motions to dismiss the charges, citing different legal rationale for each, all of which were denied. U.S. District Judge Mark Scarsi said that the case was not political. You know, I don't know. I think we live in a world today where everything is political. It should just be understood. Here's how Breitbart reported it. They said U.S. District Judge Mark Scarsi determined the case was not political, sidelining Biden's main argument by noting Biden's attorneys didn't provide evidence for the claim. It says here, he wrote, the motion is remarkable in that it fails to include a single declaration, exhibit, or request for judicial notice. Instead, defendant cites portions of various internet news sources, social media posts, and legal blogs. These citations, however, are not evidence. Scarsi added the sources, mostly media reports about the case, contain multiple levels of hearsay. The Hill report sets out the judge similarly threw out Biden's claim of selective and vindictive prosecution. No matter how you look at it, I mean, President Biden's son, Hunter, is a sleazeball from the word go. I mean, good Lord, how many photos do we need of the guy standing around in underwear or standing around naked, smoking crack and cavorting with prostitutes? It's all over the place. Should he be indicted for this? Well, maybe not his personal behavior. Don't think you should really indict him for that. But the behavior for Tax evasion? Absolutely. And any other laws he's broken. But the man keeps getting a free pass. And it's because our legal system today is dominated by leftists. I am very pleased to report that it looks like even Michelle Obama can't beat Donald Trump. According to a new poll, Trump leads both Michelle Obama and Joe Biden. I'm comfortable with that. In the hypothetical 2024 matchup, Donald Trump leads Michelle 47% to 44%. That's a little closer than I like, but that's enough to do the job. Here's how the Daily Mail reported it. They said an exclusive dailymail.com/JLPartners poll shows she would do no better in a hypothetical matchup against Donald Trump than Biden would. Our poll of 1,000 likely voters found that she would lose to the former president by 3 points in a hypothetical matchup. Some have been touting an emergency parachute for Biden for some time. Draft Michelle Obama, said pollster James Johnson, co-founder of JL Partners. But it turns out voters are no more keen to vote for Michelle over Trump than they are for Biden, with Trump beating her overall and even with independents. I love this notation here. It was never very realistic, but this poll puts to rest the idea that she can be any kind of saving force for the Democrats. In a blatant display of just how lawless some of our state governments have become, 8 states in our country now say a complete ban on gas-powered new car sales is on the way. And while the White House recently released new rules to phase out gas-powered vehicles by 2032, several states have gone further. You've got 8 that plan to completely ban the sale of new gas-powered cars by 2035. And who reported on this? The London Daily Mail. So, who's leading the charge? Well, this shouldn't surprise you. California, of course. And they're joined by Rhode Island, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, and Washington. Washington, D.C. is also committed to the ban, according to Money Magazine. And this just really angers me to the nth degree because there's nothing legal about this. So if you live in one of these states, you won't be forced to take your gas-powered car off the road. And you can still buy these cars, either used or secondhand. But what this does mean for consumers in those states is that electric vehicles already cost more to buy than gas-powered vehicles. And while the argument has been repeatedly made that charging can save consumers money over time, there are countless stories of charging nightmares, from homes catching fire to broken charging stations to long charging lines to power grids unable to support the charging infrastructure. And it's almost as if there is a certain segment of our government, be it on the state or national level, that wants to inconvenience the working man and woman as much as possible. They want to make your life as miserable as they possibly can. They're driving up food prices. They're destroying the economy. They're passing oppressive laws. And at some point, the American people are finally going to say, enough! And they're going to raise hell one way or another. Will this lead to civil war? I can't rule it out. I'm a thinking person. You're a thinking person. Can you rule out entirely the possibility of civil war? I don't think anybody can. So, we have this problem with the electric vehicles, and nobody's buying them, for one thing. These companies who switched over to building EVs are going back to building conventional vehicles. Toyota's washing their hands of the EV situation altogether. They're pouring their resources into developing hydrogen-powered vehicles, which is really the smart way to go. But all of the above issues that I listed cost consumers more money and more time, not to mention how much replacing a battery in an EV can cost. We're talking tens of thousands of dollars, my friend. And then also when looking at the manufacturing of these vehicles, the mining to produce the lithium-ion batteries, the factory production of the vehicles, pollution still exists. And it doesn't seem to reduce much of anything. In fact, Per Earth.org, almost 4 tons of CO2 are released during the production process of a single electric car. And in order to break even, the vehicle must be used for at least 8 years to offset the initial emissions by 0.5 tons of prevented emissions annually. But despite all of these issues, the left keeps pressing on, full steam ahead with all the confidence of a sleepwalker. I guess I should say full lithium ion battery ahead. Anyhow, if massive U.S. car makers can't stave off government overreach, what hope do any of the rest of us have? So this plan is yet another great example of the left's priorities being out of step. They always have been, though. And more importantly, it highlights their totally backwards definition of freedom. This is not freedom. And I'd be willing to bet you a week's pay that in the not-too-distant future, there will be some kind of a Supreme Court ruling coming down, reinforcing the fact that the government cannot force you to purchase something you don't want. But these idiots on the left, I mean, it points out again that great Walt Kelly line from the old comic strip Pogo back in the 1960s. We have met the enemy, and he is us. Let's head on over to the Comedy Corner and Dan St. Paul.
Nice to see you. I will begin by letting you know that I shaved for you people tonight. For a simple reason. I shave because when you don't shave for a few days and you're 35, you look rugged, you look cool. When you don't shave for a few days and you're 65, you look like a drunk guy on the bus. I am watching my behavior at this age because you never know when you're going to go, and I don't want my obituary to read mildly successful comedian found dead on toilet playing Candy Crush. Because I don't get up until I reach the next level, ladies and gentlemen. And you got to watch what you say, too, as you get older. You lose your filter. I was doing a show in Florida, and the audiences there are a little bit older. They don't use Uber. They call an ambulance, just in case. After the show, this woman comes up to me. She goes, "Oh, you were so funny. I couldn't believe it when you said you were 65. I said to my friend, he doesn't look 65, but now that I see you up close, you kind of do." But it's not just my group, the baby boomers, who are getting up there. Generation X is 52 years old now, ladies and gentlemen. Remember them? The punk rockers? They're getting up there. Just the other day I saw it, a guy wearing a mohawk toupee. I couldn't believe it. Tight black jeans, size 46 waistline. Combat boots with Velcro straps. Don't change. Don't try to look younger. That's when you sound stupid. I got a friend of mine my age. Calls me, "Dan, we gotta go to this new bar, man. It's really happening." I said, "Dude, I'm 65. I've happened. If I'm gonna go where I have to yell to be heard, I'll just not make the bed, leave the dishes in the sink, and wait for my wife to come home." Don't try to change your looks. That's a slippery slope. I have a friend of mine who he wears a toupee. Bald is cool now, right? But no, he wears a toupee. He goes on vacation. He leaves his toupee in his hotel room to go swimming. He comes back and it's gone. Never found it. Cost him $900. He wasn't happy with my reaction. "Wow, what a bummer to lose your hair twice." I think as we get older, we should take time and look back at all the wonderful things that we've done and appreciate all that stuff. You know, for example, just last year, I celebrated 30 years of marriage. Thank you. Four incredible women. And just one, my beautiful wife, Cara, who I love and fear. We have celebrated many moments together. Right now, we're celebrating a moment. Right now, right at this very moment, All four of our breasts are starting to sag at the very same time.
Make it a wonderful Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.